one nation under God, indivisible.
Specific divine being.
Religious discrimination.
Rediscovering God in America.
I truly do believe it's a miracle.
One nation under God.
Power of faith.
For most of you out there, the preparations are underway for Thanksgiving. And all this week, as we talk about faith in America, it's worth noting that Thanksgiving is a non-denominational holiday. People of all faiths prepare for the communal meal. But for American Muslims this year, Thanksgiving coincides with the beginning of the Hajj, the month of holy pilgrimage to the city of Mecca. All Muslims will be praying for the pilgrims this month, and thousands of Americans will be among the 2 million people who are gathering in Mecca today. Joining us now from our partner, the BBC, is Shazeb Jalani. He's on the ground in Mecca. Shazeb, good morning, and what does it look like on this first day of the Hajj?
Well, the streets of Mecca are bustling with pilgrims from all over the world. You can see them sleeping, praying, eating, shopping. And at first sight, you would think that this is probably one of the most busiest places.
And Shazeb Jalani, there are fluctuations in the number of pilgrims from year to year. What are the other things that affect the number of people who come to actually do the Hajj?
Well, many people think it's things like global recession, which affect people's decision. But I've been talking to a lot of pilgrims, and for Muslims, it's such a big deal. It's a journey of a lifetime that they've been saving for it for a while. I think this year, more than any year, it's the fear of swine flu, which has impacted people's decision. Internationally, I'm told that the crowd is more or less the same, but the local Saudi pilgrims, their numbers are much less this year than previous years. And we were talking to one of the senior officials at the Saudi Interior Ministry, and he admitted to us that they are expecting 40% decline in the number of Saudi pilgrims.
And as you say, the diversity of the Muslim world is reflected in the Hajj. You have people who bring a huge entourage and fly in their own planes, and then you have pilgrims who come with basically nothing but the clothes on their back. What do they expect over the next few days?
Well, over the last few days, pilgrims have been spending time at the sacred mosque. They've been praying and performing Umrah. Today, everybody is gathering in the tented city called Mina. Tomorrow, the pilgrims will be leaving for Arafat, which is an important milestone in these 5 days. They will be stoning the devil. And on Friday is the Eid al-Adha day, which is sort of the Muslim Christmas day. That's when they are supposed to sacrifice an animal. I mean, all these rituals are really aimed at remembering the sacrifices of Prophet Abraham and his wife. There's a social purpose to it. It is supposed to, as you said, be a symbol of solidarity, bringing in Muslims from all over the world, irrespective of their race, their language, their ethnicity, their class, their status. Everybody wears the white dress, which is sort of, you know, and they stand shoulder to shoulder throughout these rituals in very close proximity. So the whole idea is for Muslims to intermingle, to socialize, and develop a sense of belonging to one community.
Well, Shazeb Jalani, thanks so much for that picture. As we say, the Hajj beginning this week. BBC reporter Shazeb Jalani is on the ground there in Mecca. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
From the 2 million faithful in that holy city to the more than a billion Muslims around the world, in a sense, reaching out to them is the responsibility of one very busy official at the U.S. State Department. Farah Pandit is our nation's first special representative to Muslim communities. And Celeste Headley and I sat down with her a few days ago. And in contrast to some of the other faith conversations we've had on The Takeaway this week, when politics and religion mix, the conversation can get a bit guarded. And certainly, Ms. Pandit conveyed that there are more than a few hotspots on her radar. We started with asking, why do we need a special representative to Muslim communities, but not one to, say, Buddhist, Catholic, or Hindu ones?
In this moment in time, it is very important that our country do everything that we can to offer an opportunity for dialogue on a wide set of issues that are taking place around the world that affect Muslim communities, both in Muslim-majority countries and Muslim-minority countries. And this engagement comes in many forms. And so right now, this is an important piece of what we're doing. And it's not to say that one community is more important than another, but we have to look at the way in which we've been working with communities on the ground and the needs that are out there right now. And right now we feel as though working on finding ways to build partnerships is very important.
I guess, Special Representative, I have a a concern that you may have an uphill battle here, in the sense that I've spent a fair amount of time in the Middle East. And, you know, the U.S. has a reputation for saying one thing up front, but doing a lot of things behind the scenes. And the CIA has a reputation for operating with the State Department as a front. USAID, a State Department organization, has had problems in the Muslim world. I would say that, you know, a lot of Muslims would think a special representative to Muslims is just another sign that the U.S. considers Muslim communities as having to be watched in some sense.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question that you raise, and I have a problem with the way in which you described it, because it doesn't. Let's talk about the diversity of Islam, first of all. This engagement strategy is an engagement that's global. It is not just focused on one region of the world, either you know, the Middle East or another part of the world. It's an opportunity for us to get to know the next generation around the world, working on issues that aren't necessarily things that you would normally think about. When you think about ideas that young Muslims have in terms of building stronger communities, you think about their entrepreneurial spirit, their ideas to actually seed good things for the future of their communities.
And that happens all over the world. That happens all over the world.
Absolutely.
No, you make a fair point. What about Iran? What initiatives and partnerships are open to us in Iran in engaging with the Muslim communities, given the special circumstances post-election?
You know, I'm actually not going to be going to Iran, so I don't have an agenda set out for that country.
Okay, and what about some of the other hot spots? We just got a report out of Africa saying that a woman was stoned there by a radical Islamists who are going back to Sharia law. Is that part of your mission as well, to deal with those kind of issues?
We are seeing there are all sorts of things that are happening around the world, and you asked about challenging spots, and I think it's an interesting question, because there are issues that each community around the world are dealing with, whether or not you're talking about Muslims in Germany or you're talking about Muslims in Morocco, or you're talking about Muslims in any other part, in Indonesia, any other part of the world. There's not just certain buckets of things that are happening in various places.
Sure.
What we are trying to do, what we are endeavoring to do, is through our embassies to find ways to not just hit the hot crisis point issues, but to talk about things sort of that allow us to think more broadly and more creatively about engagement. And I think that's important. It's not just looking at Muslims as victims. It's giving respect to what's happening on the ground, to work with dignity and respect, and listening to what is taking place, and actually acting on some of the things that you're hearing on the ground that they want to build partnerships with. And I think that's a new approach, and I think it's a very welcome one by many. If you only look at Muslim issues when there's a time of crisis, you're playing into a narrative that suggests that Muslims are victims, and that's not appropriate.
I was going to ask you about the Hajj, which recently began. Have you already made the Hajj in your life?
I haven't made the Hajj in my life, no.
And when are you planning to go?
That's a great question. I'm not sure when I'm planning to go. It's not this year, though.
Yeah, it's a busy year.
Well, I would imagine Farah Pandith, Special Representative to Muslim Communities in the State Department, I would imagine what you just said in this discussion we've had is as good an argument as any that we need a Special Representative to Muslim Communities around the world. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Farah Pandit is Special Representative to Muslim Communities in the State Department under Hillary Clinton. Celeste and I talked with her last week. Be sure to tune in tomorrow when we continue our Faith in America series with a 27-year-old pastor who heads the White House Office on Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. It's Joshua Dubois.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.